שמנחה תעתיר צרורה. אלף בית גימל יוטב צדי. The gematria of these six letters is 506. These 506 is the gematria of the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu no ra. Kufrei Shayin, Sin Tet Nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, kra, which means tear up, satan, which is the name of the negative force that gives us free will. The same six letters can be rearranged to spell sha'ar katan, which means small gates, and it's a reminder for us to guard the entryway to our soul, the attack points from the negative side, which are the small gates in our body, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. Na gibor dor sheyehudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. Nun Gimel Dalet has a gematria of 57. 57 is the gematria of the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, or sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence of letters that we use to take back the energy we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Barchem tacharem rachame sitkacha Tami Gamlen. Bet Tet Resh, Tzadi Taf Gimel. The sequence of letters connects us to the Sphira of Netzach. Netzach has an aspect of eternal victory, and it's dealing with the only war that counts, the war between our desire to receive for oneself alone and our desire to receive in order to share. Chasim kadosh berov tuvcha nael adatach. Het kuf bet tet munayin. These six letters connect us to the sefirah of Hod. One of the aspects of Hod is appreciation. And we always need to remember the spiritual law. In order to receive more, we have to appreciate what we have already received, what we feel we have. Yachid ge'e lamcha p'nei zokre kedushatach. Yud gimel lamed pei zayin kuf. This sequence of letters helps speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium. It's also the verse that we use during this new month of Elul. The letters of the month of Elul are Resh, which created the planet Kohav, Mercury, the communicator, and the Yud, which created the constellation Betuel, which is the Virgin, the Virgo. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Talumot. Shin Kufav, Sadi Yuktav. These six letters, the first two letters have a gematria of 400, which represents the four worlds with 10 sephirot included within 10 sephirot. It represents perfection. The last four letters has the gematria of 506, which is the same as the first verse, and the same as the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And it is through this teaching that we learn that perfection and the path to perfection is only achieved through the process of love. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vayed. I'm now going to read from the Zohar, from the Parsha of Shoftim, verse 16. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenehu. V'ot Kudsha Barichu Ushkinte Sacharan Sachadin Al Barnash Ahidikti ve'idoti bachem hayom et hashamayim ve'et haaretz et hashamayim hahudi imar be'i ve'ata tishma hashamayim. Furthermore, the Holy One, blessed be He, in His Shekhinah gave constant testimony about the person, and not only on Rosh Hashanah, as mentioned. This is what is written, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day. Heaven is the one about which is written, hear you, heaven, that is Zeranpin. Earth is the one about which is written, and the earth is my footstool, that is Malchut. In addition, the two witnesses are the central column, that is Zeranpin, and the righteous is Yesod, their Ayin and Dalet of the Shema and Achad, namely the Ayin from the spelling of Shema and the Dalet from the spelling of Achad. This is the witness from the aspect of Zeranpin. There is another witness from Blessed be the name of the glory of His kingdom forever and ever, namely Ed from the word Ba'ed, which is a witness from the aspect of Yesod, in Zeranpin, which is included in Malchut. But the verse is describing how everything that we do is recorded, and there are witnesses. And the witnesses, there's a witness in heaven, because the verse Shema Yisrael Adonai Elokeinu Adonai Echad has a large ayin and a large dalet within it in the Torah, which spells the word witness. And there's a witness in Malchut as well, because the word va'ed, from Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam va'ed, is also spelling witness. And judgment is made when there are two witnesses who report together on what they saw, what they heard. And this is how judgment is rendered in heaven. The witnesses are always there because everything is recorded. But actually, the witness is your soul, because your soul will always testify honestly about what you did, what you were thinking, how you were feeling. Your soul accepts the rightness, the righteousness of the judgment that heaven puts out. And it's not just on the day you die, your judgment day, but it's on every week, it's on every day. There's a mini judgment that takes place. Does anybody have any questions before I start tonight's class? Okay. Okay, tonight's class is about tikkun. Tikkun is a very interesting subject that everybody speaks about, but very few people understand. And even those who think they understand it usually are off the mark. So let's go to the definition of the word. Tikkun means to be right, to complement, to be at standard. It means to correct, which is the way most people translate it all the time. It means to repair, to mend, to fix, to reform, to prepare, to legislate, to regulate, to improve. It's an awful lot of English words connecting to this one Hebrew word. Some of them are similar, but some of them are very different. We come into this world, as we've been taught from the sages, to remove bread of shame. That this is a metaphor to understand why the world works and why we are in this world. As a general rule, every person has many, 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 many tikkunim, corrections to make, perfections to achieve. A different metaphor to understand why we are in this world is taught by the Baal Shem Tov. It's similar. It's really saying the same thing. One is talking from us out. Tikkun is talking about us changing what's around us. What the Baal Shem Tov teaches, the metaphor is, there was a breaking of the vessels. In the process of coming from the endless world to our physical world, something appeared to go wrong. And the vessels, the sefirot, broke. They could not handle the light. And they fell. All of those breaking, like a glass breaking, all of those shards fell into the mud. They fell into the physical world, spread throughout the physical world. And those shards of light, encapsulated by the broken vessels, which are the klipah, is what we are here to elevate. These are two different metaphors speaking of the same thing to help us understand that it's really one process. We are here to change ourselves. Many people in the Jewish world speak of a term called tikkun olam, repair the world, fix the world. And the idea that is taught in that is that it's our responsibility to change the world. What is wrong about that approach from the Baal Shem Tov's metaphor and from the metaphor of tikkun is it's looking outside ourselves and not inside. The only way to repair the world is to repair ourselves. The only way to fix the world is to fix ourselves. Now, what needs to be fixed about ourselves? We were created as a desire to receive. What does it mean to be a desire to receive? When a baby is born, one of the neurological tests is they take its arms and they open it up and let the arms go. And if the baby brings its arms back inside to itself, it's a healthy baby. If the baby doesn't bring the arms back, it's not a healthy baby. And what is that actually saying? What is that reaction saying? I want everything. Bring everything into me. That's the desire to receive. That's what we are. So what's wrong with being a desire to receive? There is absolutely nothing wrong with the desire to receive. I want everything. And the only thing problem in the world is there's other people who also want everything. And that puts us in conflict. But we've found over the centuries that if we work together, we achieve more. We have more gross national product, more produce. Everything we produce is more, and there's enough for both. But still, I want everything. Yes, I know I need to work with the other person, and by doing so, we get more, we improve. But I still want it all, and he still wants it all. What's wrong with that? And that's when we come to understand the concept of the tree of knowledge, good and evil. What's wrong with that is I want it all for me alone. And that's not why we came into this world. We came into this world to remove bread of shame. We came into this world to elevate those shards of light that fell into the mud. If I'm driving down the street and I stop and let someone else cross in front of me as I make a left turn, I have done a good deed. And that good deed elevated the spark that was sitting in that intersection of the street. And that spark, I'm the only person who could elevate it. Or another person could have elevated it if they had stopped earlier. But through all the centuries, that shard of light was sitting in that street waiting for someone to elevate it. This is called tikkun. It's a very simple, specific action. It is not complicated. It is doing a good deed that goes against the desire to receive for oneself alone. This is the consciousness. This is what tikkun is. And every human being has tikkunim, has corrections to make. So how do we find out what is our tikkun? How do we find out what we have? Where we find it? What is involved? Our astrological chart, our Hebrew astrological chart, gives us many insights into our correction. The day of the week that we were born, we share a tikkun with every other person who was born on that day. And I'm not going to go into every tikkun, but I'm going to give you some examples. Everybody born on Sunday has something to do with unity, because that's the nature of Sunday. The negative aspect of Sunday, of Yom Echad, of the Chesed Sfira, is that it is one. And that it is only one. There's no two to share with. It's a lonely existence. The correction of people born on Sunday has to do with that. Some of the people will have a correction in loneliness. Some of the people will have a correction in keeping people away. How do you know which? That's by reading other parts of the chart. But everybody born on Sunday has a correction with unity. Everybody born on Saturday has a correction with manifestation, because it's coming from the seventh sphera, Malchut. everybody born on Saturday has a correction with making things happen in their life, completing things. Some people will complete too much. Some people will not complete enough. It's always, tikkun is always relative to the soul. What baggage did that soul bring into the world that it chose astrologically to be born on that Sunday or that Saturday? And this is true of every day of the week. The day of the month that you were born, not the English day of the month, but the Hebrew day of the month. The month breaks in, there's 30 days in a month, the month breaks into three sections. The first 10 days, the last 10 days, and the middle 10 days. And each of those sections of days, the first 10 days are dealing with the frame of chesed, of the frame of love, the frame of sharing. The last 10 days are dealing with receiving. And then the middle 10 days are dealing with the central column, the balance between the two. Everybody born on the 10th day of the month is dealing with something to do with manifestation of sharing. Everybody born on the 30th day of the month is dealing with manifestation of receiving. And every day, the people who are born on that day have a similar tikkun. It is not exactly the same. But we can do the tikkunim, the correction of other people, because we're close to them. We were born on the same day. There's a relationship based on that. And I'm talking about, I'm born on a Saturday on the 16th day of the month. Somebody born in China, 13,000 miles away, born on the 16th day of the month, on a Saturday, he or she and I have similar tikkunim in that respect only. Now, if they're born in Pisces and I'm born in Leo, we have different tikkun from that aspect. But we share the tikkun based on the day of the month. Another aspect of tikkun that the astrology chart teaches is each month of the year has a different tikkun. Every month has different aspects. So the month of Nisan, all of the people born in Nisan, their correction is to share without an expectation. The people born in Iyar, the Taurus, they are easily comfortable, and the correction is breaking out of their comfort zone. They want to live, they build, buy their house, they build their house, they decorated their house, and they'd never leave it because it's comfortable. But their correction is to leave the house, to break out of that comfort zone. The correction for the month of Gemini, the month of Sivan, is to recognize the duality of being a twin. And recognizing that it's important to unify the spiritual and the physical. And this is the correction of the Gemini. And the tools that they come with is being quick, knowledgeable, always moving around, all having to do with Mercury, the planet Mercury. We can go on and on. Each month has its own correction. Now, on a personal level, the correction, your personal correction is defined by your north and south node in your astrological chart. Your south node tells you what you did last lifetime. What mistakes you made last lifetime. What do you have to change about yourself from last lifetime? Your north node is telling you, what are you growing towards? What is the goal for you? And everybody born with the same north and south node have similar corrections. They're not the same, but they're similar. I'll give you an example. In the Kabbalah Center, when I was studying there, they had a term called Harisha, which means plowing, where literally they would go and try and sell Zohars door to door. And it's a very difficult, time-consuming, physically draining job. People abuse you when you knock on their door, "I'm selling a book. I'm selling a book on spirituality that you can't understand, but please buy it." People would cuss at them, curse at them. It's a difficult job. One day in Paris, somebody was doing Harisha, going door to door, and his car had a problem with water. It would overheat. And he was far from the Kabbalah Center, because that's what we did. So the last few doors that he knocked on, in addition to talking about the Zohar, he asked if he could borrow a glass of water for his car, a bottle of water, so he could fill up the radiator and he could get home safely. And one gentleman cursed him, slammed the door in his face, did not respond. He went to somebody else, he got a bottle of water, filled up the radiator, and went home. He did not let the curse and the discussion bother him. It's something that rolls off your back if you're doing Harisha. When he got there, Rabbi Berg was in town in Paris, and he was told the story, and he said that this person doing Harisha needed to go back there tomorrow to that same house and ask again. That he knew there was something important in that relationship of asking for water and not receiving it. The man needed to be given another chance, because what Rabbi Berg was saying is that is his correction. He may have come into this world solely to be given the opportunity to share a glass of water with this young Israeli Harisha worker. The next day, when the man went back to the house, he knocked on the door and found it to be a house of mourning. The man who cursed him had died. Proving what Rabbi Berg was saying. Now, when I was in the Kabbalah Center and I heard that story, to me it's very straightforward. I understood it. But there were people there who interpreted that story that the Kabbalah Center put a curse on the man and that's why he died. And that's totally false, totally not true. We come into this world to do our work. We don't know what that work is. We are given hints of what that work is to be. Where are those hints? They're in your astrology chart. Can you learn the astrology to know what your chart says? Yes, you can. Are there experts who know how to do it? I teach that there are not. Yes, there are people who are knowledgeable. But the best person to know what your spiritual correction is you. as you grow in your consciousness and you become more aware of your connection to the spiritual world, which unfortunately in Western society it's taught intuition, we don't trust intuition. It's got to be based on logic. And that's not true. We have to have balance. Yes, we need logic, but we also need intuition. There is a still small voice within us that is so quiet, it's hard to hear. We have to listen for it. We have to expand our consciousness to connect to it. And yes, sometimes our intuition will misdirect us. Ultimately, our intuition doesn't misdirect us. It's gave us that answer for a reason. Let me explain. You're driving down the street and you reach a T in the road. You can turn right or you can turn left. Can't go straight. Which way do you go? Well, you can look at the map to try and find where your location is. You can depend on the GPS meter in your iPhone. Or you can stop and meditate and ask, do I turn right or do I turn left? And you'll get an answer. And the answer is today you turn right. Why? Because today, there's another person that you have a correction with, that if you turn right, you will meet him. You might hit him have a car accident, and that's how you'll meet him. Or it could be that he's just so gorgeous, you'll stop the car and get out to introduce yourself. Or it could be just that he's talking to a friend of yours, and you stop and get introduced. But you're told to turn right so you can meet that person. Does that mean that the person is right for you, is your soulmate? No. It means you have a correction with that person. It means you have to do a good deed, or that person has to do a good deed for you. And when those good deeds are done, there is a shard of light that moves from the earth into your body and waits for your process of elevating it back to the spiritual planes. When you go to sleep at night, your soul will take that shard and deposit it where it belongs in the sphera. That's metaphorically what a tikkun is all about. It's a simple action. Yes, here's a glass of water. When you get to know, when you are in touch with your intuition, when it comes to your tikkun, your intuition will not speak to you. It will just say, you're in the frame of tikkun, make a decision. It won't tell you what to do. It won't take away your free choice. But you know that this is important. You know that this is what you are here to do. And you'll pay attention to it. And you'll use logic. You'll use all of the tools. And you'll make the right choice. Because you have been making the right choice through restriction all along. What other areas of astrological tikkun? The year that you were born, you share a tikkun from that year. The name of the year tells you what that tikkun is. It tells you what that energy is in that year. I sent out an email today giving you a link on the website that you can determine what's going to come up in next year that starts in 30 days. We're in Rosh Chodesh Elul. The new year starts in 30 days. I gave you an email that gives you all of the information you need to know what the energy will be next year. I even gave you my opinion about what that is. But I told you, the best person to know what's going to happen to you next year is you. Because you have all of the capabilities. You know the tool of restriction. You know the tool of the Anabba Koach. You know the tool of hearing the Torah on Shabbat. You know the tools of the Aleph Bet. You know your correction from the astrological chart. And that's just one aspect, because there's a whole other aspect that literally is based on your name. Your name converted to Hebrew letters. There are verses in the Torah, in the Tanakh. There are verses that God is speaking to you in your life today. I just worked with a person today. She had gone on she's having some issues about whether she's Jewish or not. She's having some issues about whether if she converts, whether they will let her stay with her husband or not. All kinds of chaos. She knows what's right. She knows she needs to return. There's all of these other issues. So we looked at her verses. She has insights that she is Jewish for the last 11 generations. Those 11 generations use the name Goldsmith in a different tongue in wherever she is from. She opens a verse and it's talking about a goldsmith and what the goldsmith will do. She opens a verse and it's talking about a Kohen, a priest, who has to separate from his wife because his wife isn't clean, meaning isn't pure. And this is what took place during the building of the Second Temple. No, it's not going to apply to her. She doesn't have to leave her husband because she knows the verse is speaking to her. But it's not complete. There's something wrong within it. She is getting all kinds of signs about the number 11. What she didn't know and which I told her today, 11 relates to the incense, the ketoret, and the ketoret is what brings us closer to Hashem. It takes 11 components. One of those components actually smells bad. When it's mixed with the other 10, it smells okay. But by itself, it's absolutely horrible. And it comes to teach us that even the negative side of ourselves and the Satan is all part of God's creation. And it's all about bringing us closer to God. These verses are telling her what to do. God is speaking to her about her tikkun. She needs to be closer to God. This is what she came into this world to do. She married a man. She needs to go through this process of coming closer to God. She will have free choice as to how that is done. We all have many, many, many tikkunim. But we have ways of knowing what they are. We have ways of understanding it if we take the time to learn it. On our website, it is not complete, but it's moving in that direction. there are, on the Mazel Knowledge link, there are days of the year, which has a tikkun. Everybody born on day 232 has a connection, has a tikkun that is similar to everybody else born that day. Click on day 232 of the year. What day is 232? I haven't calculated it out, but when I do 232, I will tell you it's the 5th of Cheshvan or the 9th of Adar. Whatever day it's supposed to be, you will know. There is the day of the week, and all of those are complete. Take a look at it. What day were you born? We have not completed the section that will let you convert your English birth date to the Hebrew and give you the day you were born and give you all of this information automatically. But it's coming. It's one of our goals. And until that time, you can ask the question, what day of the week was I born? And I'll look it up and send it to you, email it to you. But ask specific questions. Don't ask me to do a chart for you. I will give you information, but you need to build the vessel to understand your correction, to understand your tikkun. The vessel is your questions. Spend some time reading what it says on the Mazel Knowledge page. Spend some time on what it says on the Yeshem page, the name section. Look at your personal verses. Read them. They're speaking to you. God is speaking to you through them. You want to know? Do your work. Don't ask me to do it for you. Don't ask anybody else to do it for you. Do your work. We came into this world to make correction. We came into this world to remove bread of shame. We came into this world to elevate sparks. All of these metaphors are talking about the same thing. We live in a generation where the tzaddikim, the spiritual guides, are concealed from us. They're hidden. They're in this world. They know all about Kabbalah. They know all about what they're supposed to do and what you're supposed to do. But they don't have permission to tell you. In earlier generations, you could go to a Rebbe and he would tell you, your correction is to open that cabinet door when your wife wants to put the dishes away. And you're going to laugh and say, well, that's an easy correction. But not for the man who's doing it, who's taking care of the four kids at the same time, who is overwhelmed with his financial pressures at that moment in his mind. All of this comes together in the universe, and he still has to overcome his natural desire to say, no, you do it. But that's his correction. And he will do it correctly if he practices restriction throughout the rest of his life. If he's not practicing restriction, he has a chance to get it right. He has free choice. But old Satan is very strong. And he's going to whisper, you're busy, she can do it. Our corrections are really simple tasks. Rabbi Berg tells a story of someone. He was playing tennis, and the gate was on one side of the fence, and the ball went over the other side. So to go get the ball, he had to go outside and all the way around the court. And there was somebody walking by just as that happened. Please, throw the ball back. And the woman walked on and didn't do it. She was busy. It's understandable. Not really, because it's such a simple task. She will be given another chance to do that correction. It won't be in front of Rabbi Berg, it will be in front of someone else. She will be asked to pick up a ball and throw it back. There is a story taught about 300 years ago, a true story. Man had a dream. He was a butcher. His job was to ritually slaughter the chickens and the meat for Friday night, getting ready for Shabbat. And his father came to him Thursday night in a dream and said, a woman will come to you on Shabbat. She will ask you about a chicken. If it's kosher, make sure she has meat for Shabbat. That's the message in the dream. And he looks every minute of every moment of that Friday. He's looking for this woman. And guess what? She doesn't show up. And next Friday, he's looking again. And she doesn't show up. 40 years later. Just as Shabbos is coming in and he's running to the synagogue, he's late for prayers. He's pressured with everything he has to do Friday afternoon. And that's when a woman stops him. Is this chicken kosher? And he says, I'm late for prayers, because he forgot his father's dream. And he went to the synagogue. That night, as he was doing Kiddush at home, when he came home from prayers, and he's doing Kiddush, he's saying the prayer, he faints, and he remembers the father dream, he remembers the woman, and he realized that he had blown it, he'd lost it. He did not do his tikkun. And he told his family, when he woke up from the faint, he told his family, go find this woman, give her this chicken, get her the meat for Shabbat. And they ran around town looking for this woman. Till they found her. And they gave a wonderful meal for that family's Shabbat. Too poor to buy its own. Through the actions of his family, he completed his tikkun. The actions of his family, meaning certain people can assist you in your tikkun. You have to know who they are and how they will help you. That's built into your astrological chart as well. It's built into the information. But what that moment of choice, do I throw the ball over the fence or do I hurry to my meeting? You will forget it. You will have your heart hardened, as it says in the Torah, about Pharaoh. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. We don't know, what does that mean? It's very simple. Pharaoh faced a plague, a horrible experience. He was frightened, he was scared, he was hungry. He was uncomfortable with frogs in his stomach. Everything was the worst that it could be. What kind of free choice does someone have under those conditions? He doesn't. When it says God hardened his heart, it means he made Pharaoh forget this pain and suffering. He brought him back to a level where he could choose for himself, free choice. Do I send the Jews out or do I not? Free choice. You will be given free choice. You will be caused to forget all of these actions and knowledge that we give you. Except there's a reshima of this information. Your body has learned it over the days and weeks of studying Kabbalah, of practicing restriction. And your body will do restriction. It will do the right choice because you've studied Kabbalah. This is the nature of tikkun. I invite you to ask the questions by email. I invite you to study. The information is there. Come learn it. No one else can do the work for you. Someone else can do part of the work for you, just like that man's family could get the woman her chicken for Shabbat. But ultimately there is something that only you can do, a tikkun, a correction that only you can do. And everybody is waiting in the Garden of Eden for you to complete it. Don't be the last one out of the barn here. Study. Scan the Zohar. Say the Anabakoach. Scan the 72 names, both sets. Do your spiritual actions. Hear the Torah on Shabbat. Practice restriction. Give tzedakah. Do tshuva during the month of Elul and any month of the year. Do the actions. Do the tools. Teach your body to do righteousness, to do right. That is what tikkun is all about. Doing right. It's right to stop and throw the tennis ball over the fence. It saves the person a number of steps. It's right to hand somebody the glass of water. It's right to open the cabinet door when she has her hands full with dishes. How do you know what's right? Teach your body restriction. Teach it. Study it. Do it. Does anybody have any questions?
Why do we have to eat meat?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Why is it important to eat meat on Shabbat?
Why is it important to what?
Eat meat.
Gloria, I'm not able to see your mouth move because it's below the camera, so speak louder, please.
Why do we have to eat meat?
Why do we have to? Next word?
Eat.
Eat?
Meat. Dead animal.
Why do we have to keep kashrut? Why do we have to keep kosher?
No. Why do Jewish people eat meat? Cows, chickens.
Why do we eat meat? If you read the Bible, prior to the flood, the human being from Adam to Noah did not eat animals. We only ate vegetarian meals. There was no right. We didn't have the right to eat animals. But when the people died in the flood, their corrections, their tikkun, was to be reincarnated into animals. Some of them into rocks. Some of them into blades of grass and trees and flowers. And the only way for those sparks of light called a soul to elevate was by people eating them. Even today, when we eat Friday night's fish, that fish that comes to the Kabbalist table has a soul of a righteous person within it, a righteous person who did something that needs to be corrected. But he doesn't have to come into a regular incarnation, go through childhood to maturity to do this one simple action. He will come to you, to your body, to your soul. You will eat him. He will rest within your body. And sometime in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 months, there will be an action where you will relinquish control of your body to that soul so that he is doing the action. He is giving the glass of water to the person or throwing the ball over the fence. And in exchange for you lending him your body, he's going to assist you in overcoming the things that you can't find it difficult to do. He's going to reinforce your own willpower to eat less or to stop smoking or to do some aspect of your correction. We don't understand all of how things work. The sages have taught us. We do understand it. But most people, we just go through life seeing the physical world and not recognizing the illusion. We eat animals because there are souls that need elevation there. There are sparks of light. And there is a correction between the soul of that human in the animal and your soul, and that's why it comes to you. There are stories told about the Ari, where lambs and goats would walk up to him and start talking to him in their language. And they had a whole conversation. The human soul in that lamb, the human soul in that goat, is telling the Ari, I'm ready. I'm ready. My tikkun is finished with this animal. I did wrong. I've cleansed it. It's time for me to be elevated. Please have a sulda, please have a meal. Slaughter me in the ritual manner, help me elevate. And the Ari would question the animal about what it did and why and so forth. And then they would have a sulda. That would be the animal that would be used for that Shabbat. Now we don't have the level of the Ari. But we know that the animals that come to us on Shabbat have souls that can be elevated. And they're hoping that we will do the right actions. They're hoping that we will say the blessing beforehand and the blessing after. That we will elevate the fish with the l'chaim. That they will do these rituals that have purpose behind them.
I want to become a vegetarian.
If you feel that it's time for you to be a vegetarian, it just means that there are no sparks left that your soul can elevate. But other people are there to elevate the souls of other people. But the people who become vegetarians do so because there's no sparks for them anymore. And that's why you have a greater and greater growth of vegetarians. Because there's less souls being incarnated in animals. There's less souls that need correction. Yes, the population got bigger, but the population of souls is smaller. There is a significant amount of souls in the Garden of Eden waiting for us to complete our actions. Let's stop keeping them waiting. Say again?
It's very interesting.
I agree. I find it absolutely amazing. And that's why I teach it. Are there any other questions? Tomorrow night, Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Los Angeles time, we will do this again. Conference call and video for those who want to join us by video. The conference call will be discussing the mitzvot, the mitzvah of being a gossip. Why it's wrong and how to change it and how to correct it. On Thursday night at 10 o'clock, L.A. time, we will be reading from the Parasha of Shoftim, the Zohar. Come join us. And Sunday, we're doing a basic class at 10 a.m., and that basic class is dealing with reincarnation, similar to what we talked about here, but not the same. Any questions before I hang up? Have a beautiful day, a beautiful Rosh Chodesh, head of the month. Enjoy the process. It is all good. Shalom.